Hello, everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I'm one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Jess. I am Craig Campbell. I am the owner of Nerdburger Games, and I make a bunch of tabletop role-playing games as well. And we have a brand new guest, somebody who's not been on the podcast before.
Yay!
Coyote, hello. Welcome. Welcome aboard.
Hello.
And tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do in the world of TTRPGs.
My name is Coyote Crow. I am a writer, editor, and narrative designer for a bunch of different TTRPGs.
So what is like one of the TTRPGs that you would be like, here's the TTRPG that I would like to present to the world right now?
Oh gosh, I do a lot of work for Onyx Path Scion 2nd Edition, and coming out at the end of the month is the TTRPG version of The Secret World, which was a collaboration between Funcom and Star Anvil Studios.
Yes, very exciting. and you're here today to talk to us, not about that, but about androids. I'm very androids, like my cell phone.
Really? I mean, Android.
I have not fallen into the Apple camp, but that's next week's episode. It's Apple's. Craig, do you want to introduce our topic before we jump into things today?
Sure. It was one of those ones that made it onto the list because in looking at, you know, androids in a game, from kind of an I imagine we'll kind of touch on player's perspective as well, but also as GMing and making things interesting for a player that is playing an android, as opposed to, like we were joking about before the podcast started, like having an android in your game at the table. That's a whole different beast. That's coming up down the road sometime, maybe within my lifetime. And then also designing for androids in an RPG, because I think there's something interesting about a being that is created by, like, ostensibly, at least as a baseline, human, created by humans, who is supposed to more or less resemble and mimic humans or be very much like humans, for all the good and bad that might be, and how to build that in the game as a GM and also as a designer by differentiating it from just like, oh, it's just a, you know, you're just playing a human, but with like a little bit of a different skin. Like you might look a little different. You can't suffocate. You know, you require a recharge rather than, you know, eating food. Just little, you know, cosmetic sort of things. Like what can we do as GMs to make the experience of playing this human but not human, and how close to human are they? Interesting. And also, how can we design to kind of make that part of the game?
Yeah, so Coyote. Also, I always forget to do this with our new guests. My pronouns are she, they. What are your pronouns, if you're comfortable sharing?
They're she, they as well.
Same. Twins.
Yeah, twinning.
I am he, him. I know what Jess is gonna say, so I'm gonna usurp. I'm gonna say it this time. Coyote, you picked the topic. What intrigued you about this one? Let's get the start up.
So what intrigued me about it was that androids and constructs are something that it's like a playable race that I tend to gravitate toward as a neurodivergent person. And I think a lot of neurodivergent players actually do this. A lot of times it can happen with identifying with an android character from like an existing form of media and like having that really speak to us, and then we kind of get interested in that and want to go ahead and play it out. And I've played as android characters before, and I've GM'd for players who wanted to be android characters, and I thought it was really neat to discuss like what a player might be looking for out of the experience of playing an android.
Yeah, what kinds of things have you gotten out of players that when you've had these conversations with them?
One of the things that I like to ask of anybody, but especially if I sense or if I have been trusted with the knowledge that somebody is neurodivergent, you know, I ask them, what do you want out of this? What is, you know, like, I don't, no spoilers or anything, but like, what are you looking for as a whole? You know, like, I still want to throw in some surprises, but tell me what kind of experience you are looking to have from this and what is going to make you feel fulfilled. And a lot of times it's an exploration of like, I think it's been mentioned of like, what does it mean to be human? What types of humanity are there? Is it possible for a construct to be more human than a human, to, you know, quote Rob Zombie a little bit? But, you know, I think that's an incredibly interesting topic to explore, especially within the sphere of neurodivergence, where like sometimes we're kind of made out to be not quite right, or like a little to the left of human or something. And so there can be some triggering stuff that comes up with that. So it's really good to talk about, you know, like, are you okay with facing this, and how would you like to face it, and how much of this would you like for to be part of this story, you know, or would you like to separate yourself from that to get a little bit of escapism? So those are all good things to talk about with androids, and as well as, you know, like, how do you, how would you like to represent this journey that your character is going to be on?
Yeah, I think that that discussion is so important, especially when it comes, like, a lot of the media we see relating to androids and replicants and these beings that are manufactured humans, essentially, is like this idea that, oh, they don't have as many rights as us, or they can be discriminated against, and it's okay. And I can see how that could be really, that could be really triggering for someone who is identifying as this character because of something that they connect to because of their neurodivergence. I can, like, that is definitely on the list of topics you should discuss with your whole group if you're getting into that sci-fi realm. I think that's important, even if you don't have a have players who are playing an android character.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
Same thing goes for, like, I mean, I think androids have a very particular, they have some very specific things that are different. Like, for example, mutants, that's another big one. Like, oh, these, like, you know, when I was a kid, I like so identified with the mutants of X-Men, and their whole plot is this discriminatory plot. Like, people, the society is against them. How are they rising up? I think, oh gosh, that can just like break into a whole can of worms, and it can be really easy to fall into the tropes of the media that we see when we're GMing for these topics. And I think that there are interesting avenues to go through, even if you have players that are uncomfortable getting in there, they want the escapism. There are other paths we can go down. But it, you know, we just have to break away from the pop culture that we've been kind of raised in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's worth asking too, if, you know, within the story, there's a lot of different storylines that can be pursued. There's a lot of things, you know, ideas that surrounding the idea of androids and android characters in the group, amongst, one would assume, amongst human characters, that it's worth kind of checking with too, is like, do you want, ask the player, you know, are you comfortable with the idea of, like, there's potentially in this game world bigotry, like outright bigotry toward those characters, toward androids. There's you know, othering and making them, you know, doing everything you can to diminish them and make them seem like, well, they're just they're glorified toasters, you know, they're little more than machines. And that, because there's a plethora of other things you can explore without necessarily going down that road. So you could just kind of delineate, is that something you want to go down? Just the same way you would say, you know, if you're playing a game set in a particularly strife-filled era, do you want to are the characters dealing with that strife directly? If there's prejudice and bigotry involved in that strife, is that something that you're going to play through? You know, are players portraying characters of the types of characters that are in the middle of all of that, or are you telling stories on the periphery with that as the backdrop? That so that it's there, it's, you know, it's lines and veils. It's like, is it in the shadow? Is it kind of over there looming and lurking, or is it front and center in the storyline?
Yeah, is it Detroit Become Human or Star Wars is droid manumission?
Right. I was just thinking about in Star Wars, like, oh, we don't serve, why?
We don't serve your kind here. That's one of those weird through lines in Star Wars that there's straight up, like, that's bad news. There's a lot of, like, it's in the attitudes toward droids in there, considering that, like, we've got our point of view characters are droids. And arguably C-3PO being the most human like, effectively, you know, an android, for our purposes and what we're describing. It's a weird thing, you know, the whole, like, did we wipe his memory or not? Wait, what? You're doing what?
Oh my gosh.
A sapient creature. But
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you get fantastic characters too, like K2SO and I think HK-47. Am I correct about that one? Oh. It's a Knights of the Old Republic, I think. But they're the ones, I mean, K2SO is the one that's just, like, really, like, grumpy and blunt. And I really like that aspect of it, too, getting to be very direct with people and having most people actually respond to that and like it is kind of thrilling, too, of them just kind of enjoying the inherent passive aggressiveness that droids can sometimes express.
This like kind of almost they are logical and they will say it like it is. That's what we like about K2SO. That's what we like even about C-3PO. Like, yeah, he's a little, you know, what would be the best word, like, he's anxious and, like, all these emotions that you wouldn't necessarily expect out of a robot, because those are human emotions, but there he is describing, being logical, saying, oh, we have no shot, and therefore I am anxious about it, or, like, you're doing something out of pocket, like, let me insult you for it from the K2SO side.
And the argument being, of course, like, if you needed a droid, an android, to function as a, you know, human cyborg relations, as a social bridge type of character. He knows all these languages. He can translate. He can.
Yeah, good point.
Why would you program him to be so nervous and so full of worry and willing to explain, like, give you the odds of every single thing when it's at the absolute wrong time? Like, clearly that has not been programmed into C-3PO. That is something that he developed at some point or another. And that is something that can be really fun, like, from a player's perspective, to kind of, like, well, what if I take, like, okay, all the robotic if then statements, like a robot does, you know, basic stuff. And now we're going to start to layer on humanity. Well, what aspects of humanity are there and why do they come about? And, you know, you could come up with a lot of different reasons, for an android character to develop these emotions, other than them being programmed into them. They could, you know, if they're thinking and learning machines, they're going to develop that stuff much the same way a child fresh out of fresh onto the planet doesn't have all of those things, but develops those as part of being human and part of it, the people that it's exposed to, the situations that it's exposed to, nature and nurture and all that sort of thing. And androids can very well have all of that happen too. So as a GM, you can, you know, help to speak with the player and guide and suggest ideas, like, well, okay, you want to play your android character as grumpy. Well, why is he grumpy? What makes this android grumpy? It wasn't programmed to be grumpy. Something's happened.
Right.
they've been exposed to something.
Or was programmed to be grumpy, and then you can come up with situations like, oh, now this character is also learning how to deal with situations where they're not going to be grumpy. They're developing these other emotions. And those are great topics and themes to explore, aside from the ones we talked about earlier, if those are uncomfortable. I love the idea of nature versus nurture. I love the idea of, you know, escaping your programming, escaping what it means to be, like, who you were, quote unquote, destined or created to be. I think those are really interesting, not just for the android character, but then all the humans that are around them.
Yeah, everybody, and the other players get to, and you, the GM, get to enjoy the surprise of, like, oh, this is new. Like, this was not part of the character back when they started. They've developed in this particular way because of this particular thing, but with, like, a unique little twist that has to do with the fact that they recognize that they were manufactured. That plays into something. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, there might be different feels about, like, you came out of a factory as opposed to you were created as a, pardon the expression, a commitment of love between two people, you know, but like there's, it's a different thing. Like, you came off the assembly line, or maybe mm-hmm. you were bespoke. You were built by someone for a specific purpose, which feels a little bit more like being, you know, born human. Like, you weren't just one of many, you were like a unique creation for a reason. There's so much fertile ground there.
There is. Okay. Yeah. I love the idea of like logical neuroses too, like you mentioned, where it's like this robot has developed anxiety, but like in the sense of that it's thinking in systems and it's using if then statements as being like, yeah, computer level logical. You can kind of explore, you know, what it means to process trauma in a mechanical way, but to still have it affect you in a way that can be read by and identified with from the non-android characters, and how that can perhaps bind a group together who has an android in it, where they, even though it is very logical for them to maybe be afraid of this thing or aggressive toward this thing, whatever it was that they encountered that has become a problem for them, that's now some way that they can relate to players who are organic.
Yeah, do you have any specific like characters that either you've played or you've GM'd for that have explored these aspects? And since you chose this topic, I'm wondering if you have some specific experiences you'd like to share.
Yeah, I've GM'd for a number of people who chose to play androids or, you know, depending on the system, cyborgs, constructs, warforged, that kind of thing. And even people who were not neurodivergent, neurotypical people gravitate to these characters just as much because they're looking to, most of the time, at least in my experience, only speaking for that, they're looking to explore their own nature in a different way. And often what they want to do at the core of the experience that they want to have with their character is getting to be something that is very close to who they are or who they see themselves as. They see some kind of aspect of themselves in the android character that they're making, and they want a different way to bring that to the forefront of their experience and explore that in a way they wouldn't get to do with an organic character. So sometimes I've seen them, I've seen players who were very interested in gaining emotional intelligence, even just as a person. It's almost like therapy. Like they want to go through the experience of like, well, am I missing something when it comes to empathy? And, you know, like maybe if we play that out and explain it in a way that we would explain it to a machine, I can better myself and my relations with other people. I was recently in a Star Wars campaign where I played LEX-1, who was called Lexi. And she was originally, and this is the term that Star Wars uses, but a pleasure droid. And with her, what I wanted to explore was, you know, as a woman, I've always been very aware of my body. I think we all are, because of the way that it is commodified and observed, and the weight of that observation that becomes like this tangible thing that weighs on us. And getting to play someone who was made for, you know, ostensibly made for that purpose, or just as a companion, what have you, who then got to also become a manumissionist and use what she was made for to her own advantage in a way that did not benefit her masters, that was a very important story for me to be a part of. And I got some real catharsis from being able to, I mean, that's part of the, at least my power fantasy is freedom, getting, rising above, getting out. And that was a really great way for me to experience that. And I was very grateful to my GM who really sensed that. I mean, we've known each other for a few years, but that is what I like to see when I'm playing an android or when I have players who are androids, is what is the real story here? What are you, what is going to make you feel fulfilled, and how does it make you feel fulfilled when going through this avenue versus a more organic character?
Yeah. What is the programming a yes. symbol for? What is this? What
right.
Is this
exactly. Symbolism? Yeah. What's the metaphor? Mm-hmm. What are we doing?
What does it mean? And what does it really mean?
Exactly. Why is
the subtext of everything?
Yeah.
That can be, I mean, that can be super powerful. And also on the other side of the coin there, because you said you were playing a pleasure droid, there are also a lot of people who want to play an android character that is completely devoid of sexuality. A lot of people who I know who are Aero or Ace gravitate toward these characters as well, because, you know, again, this is like, oh, this is an aspect of me and I can kind of represent it in this way. And explore what that means vis-a-vis the organic people over on this side too. I think that there are so many ways. Just the idea of using TTRPGs to explore oneself, like I've done it myself. It's man, it's one of my favorite things about gaming. Amazing story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing as well. And I was just going to say that there's a saying that's going around right now that is like, we're all just the universe trying to experience itself. And that is how I often feel about games and TTRPGs, particularly where you are adopting a role, is we're finding different ways to experience ourselves. And I think that's a really beautiful and an incredibly powerful thing, like you said.
And the beauty of doing it with the game is that, you know, in our everyday lives, as we go about with our families and our friends and working and, you know, our hobbies and whatever it is that we're doing, like we're often too busy to be thinking about all of these things and to really reflect on all of these things. And if you're using the role-playing game to specifically explore that, or at least in part of the reason for the playing the character in the role-playing game is to explore that, it's a period of time where you can say, okay, now I'm gonna set all this other stuff aside and I'm gonna really kind of focus and think about this. I'm gonna use this as a time of reflection and exploration and trying to figure things out. It's something that you can do outside of a game. Obviously you can do it in your everyday life. There's plenty of people who use meditation and just quote unquote, for lack of a better term, quiet time, just taking time to reflect and really think about. Some people do it through journaling, where you're kind of examining yourself and figuring out, like, who do I want to be? How do I become more like that person? How do I become less of this? How do I shed these toxic things? How do I gain more of these better things? It is the ability to reflect and change and affect change in ourselves like that. That is a very, very human trait. And, within the boundaries of a game with a group of people at the table that you trust and who know that that's kind of the thing you're going after, I can see, absolutely, it can be cathartic, especially if if you're playing with it in a healthy group where everybody's on everybody else's side, then, they're all there for you for the journey, even if they're not actively participating. And this is we're kind of talking like again a lot about players, but from a GM standpoint, this is like encouraging players to keep this in mind becomes useful. Even if you're not actively participating in that exploration, you're still an observer of it and you can be supportive.
I was just gonna comment that humans are so well suited to learn and connect through play. And this is true for, if you're neurotypical, neurodivergent, anywhere in between, it really doesn't matter. We're all extremely well suited to learning about one another and creating bonds and feeling connected through play. And that's not something that we as adults, I think, get to do very often. I mean, we as adults, because we work in TTRPGs and everything, that's a little different. But like, just the broader we, the royal we, as adults don't really get to play as often as we probably should. And so, I mean, that's a really great way to, you know, get people to feel good.
Yeah, that's okay. It gets socialized out of so many people.
Yeah.
That you know, people take Henry IV to heart too much toward the end where, you know, put away a child, no longer a child, so I put away childish things.
Childish things, yeah.
Screw that. Hang on to at least some of those childish things. Because they can bring you a great deal of joy, and they can give you the opportunity to do things exactly like this.
Oh, TTRPGs, you're so amazing. I was saying that a lot of our assumptions as a podcast too. We as listeners, as you know, our assumption is that you're playing with people that you can play with, that are nice and friendly and know you and want the best options at the table. We are talking with these great things in mind. My advice for everyone who's in a table that's not like that is to not play there anymore, to go somewhere else and find that group, or, you know, have a heart to heart with your GM and the other players.
Absolutely.
So what about designing? What about designing with androids in mind? How can we insert these things into either the adventures that we're making or into the whole games that we're creating, that allow people to explore those themes that we talked about in the first half, with androids. I have experience writing android-like characters, but instead of stand-ins for humans, I used the androids as a stand-in for the Fae in my game, because the Fae for me are also very much like, oh, they're kind of like humans, but they're not. They have their own way of thinking. They are, you might imagine them as humans to be very reasonable and human-like and follow human logic and laws and ethics, but that's not true. I thought, oh, that's very much like an android in a sci-fi game. And since I was making a fantasy game with some sci-fi elements, I wanted to include that. And I think that there are lots of ways we can kind of mix and mesh and design these worlds that let you think about robots and androids in a different way. So I'm interested to hear what you two have to say about that and those worlds. I know that Craig also has designed very similar things because I played one of his games.
And I've got something in my ideas folder and there's even a document with some bullet points and things of a game that revolves largely around androids in a society that, where the androids are just kind of coming into their own. So there still is, you know, bigotry and problems, but they're at the point where they're kind of becoming more quote unquote human, but they're going to become their own thing. Right. And so I was secretly delighted when you picked this topic, Coyote, because I was like, oh, this is going to be all sorts of cool ideas for things that I want to do with the game. One of the things that I had initially in mind was, you know, in RPGs, in especially in a lot of the ones that I design for sure, you've got, you know, special abilities, whatever that is. Like, you know, it can be exemplary training, it can be a plethora of skills, it can be magic, it can be psionics, it can be whatever. Is having the android characters when you play the character from, you know, first creation, is that everything that they have access to is like if then. Like, if I do this, if I make this check, I do this, if I spend this point, I get this bonus, and it's all hard and fast. But then as you progress the character, they have access to abilities that become a little more open-ended and a little more ephemeral, and that embrace the idea of creativity and collaboration with the GM to kind of pinpoint what the effect is going to be like, you know. So like, my character does this, and then I have this kind of broad range of, I can make these different things happen, but what's the right one in this circumstance, and how does it fit to the moment and how my character feels, because the character is gaining emotion and so forth. And like, I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but that was my initial thought, was having like literally having game mechanics that reflect the idea of more complex capability, because it's not, you're not limited by quote unquote programming of if then statements.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful to when you are designing any, you know, like quote unquote race or but especially for androids. I love when designers are blunt with that. Like, I love when it's just like, hey, we considered it and then we wrote it down and now you can read it and you can implement that the way that you want to implement it. Because, you know, the analysis paralysis of like, there are so many ways that we could take this can be overwhelming. And then, you get stuck as a designer, you're not sure, you know, what you want to do. But when you have a little bit of a framework, that can spark so many ideas, some of which can be completely out of the box, but might work super, super well and might require a little bit of revising of the original. But I do love when there is a very direct approach to like letting a GM know, like, these are just some of the things that you can do with this racer class, you know. It plants a seed. And something that I wanted to mention, Jess, when you were talking about androids, you kind of made them like the Fae. That's fascinating to me because a lot of the work that I do in writing for TTRPGs, especially for Scion and to some extent for the Secret World, revolves around history and folklore. And are you familiar with the idea or the theory, I guess, that changelings may have actually been children who were autistic or who had other developmental delays or disorders, whose parents would be like, oh, this can't be my child. You know, the baby that I had a few months ago was just so different. This must have been left for me by the Fae. And if I leave them outside, the Fae will return my actual child. Because a lot of what mothers were saying, you know, would constitute a changeling is stuff like, you know, like extreme fussiness, colic, won't make eye contact, won't talk, won't. And so to connect them to androids is really fascinating for me and something that I hadn't thought of before. And that is just so cool that there's a through line there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have definitely heard about that. I grew up with fairy stories from my mom. She would talk to me about changelings all the time. And I think that that is also very interesting. And that also happened, unfortunately, in some cases with women after giving birth, their husbands would say, oh, my wife is a fairy and I need my actual wife back, please. There's a lot of instances where like a big emotional change or a developmental change, people would attribute that to fairies, changelings, and all sorts of thoughts like that. I found that to be fascinating. It definitely went into the design of my work. And the idea too that maybe some of these fae would take children and replace them with some of their own, or would adapt human babies into their own society. And what would it be like on the reverse side for a human to be living in a world where everyone is essentially what is like a programmed non-human but human like, what would the reverse be like as well? All of those things are just so fascinating to me. And that's also why I like androids too. I love, there are so many fun and interesting like ways of thinking about what your brain is doing and how your brain and body and personality connections all go, all link up. I don't know. It's just it's very interesting to explore. And I only dove into like a little tiny piece of it, like the lore that I particularly like about fairies too. And also the other like, oh, you scatter a bunch of seeds on the ground and the fae have to stop and pick them up. Like, oh, that sounds like a programming that they can't stop. Like, sounds like something that they can't stop themselves from doing. That sounds very robotic to me. All of those things were just, I don't know. It's so... the through line is there, and I want more people to look at that.
It's so cool. I love that you did that. It's absolutely fascinating. Super into it.
My internet just bugged out again, of course.
I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled of all the discussion. This is all really, I mean, some of it I kind of knew about, some of it is brand new. This is great. I would also like to say, as a side note, isn't science great that we actually do understand what postpartum depression is, and we're not going to be blaming, you know, we are learning more and more about autism and what kind of effects that can have on people. So we're not necessarily beholden to these particular beliefs, which are fascinating folklore, but also it's very good that they are folklore. And in the past.
Other things that are not necessarily to do with the brain and personality and mental development of your Android characters are also the physical things that you can do with your Android characters in your games, because they are not human, they're not necessarily tied to the biological standards. You could have if you're comfortable, maybe even with a little body horror in the games that you make, you could dive into some of the themes of, okay, well, I can change my chassis, I can change my limbs, I can change, I could even, you could have like, oh, different personality boxes, even if you wanted to do that. Like, I can download or actually physically graft new abilities onto my body and have that be a change in these characters. I have not made a game like that necessarily, but I think that those are ways, like Craig was saying, like instead of if-then statements, maybe it's like literal actual physical hardware for your characters. I think something like that could go really hard in a sci-fi game, or even in a present day game, as we're getting more and more advanced with what we can do with biohacking in different ways.
That could get really interesting too, with if you've let's say you're playing, like looking at this from a design perspective, like let's say you've got a player, they're playing this Android character, the character has advanced and progressed in the game system, and they're, you know, they've gained the ability to add these, you know, physical, like make these physical changes. They could like literally add arms or change like what they're, you know, change their whole appearance. But do the androids have a sense of self that is, this is who I am, this is what I look like, and I make these changes to myself, and for now I've got, like, now I can look like someone else, or I can have these extra arms and do really, you know, wonderful things with and everything, but it's not me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not in my own body anymore, and how does that affect me, and how does that play into the game, and can that be simulated in some respect with some sort of light game mechanic kind of thing, where like maybe you can't do that for that long, where you like you lose the sense of who you are, the same way that, you know, just a human being. Like if I've heard stories of people, if they get, you know, a significant illness, or like I don't feel like myself. Like there's something that's changed about my body that my truth, my understanding of who I am was this thing for all this time, and now all of a sudden I've got this thing, that doesn't feel like part of me. It's like it's separate from me, and I feel like it's attacking me, and it's making me lose a little bit of who I was before. And like,
yeah,
taking that to that level with like making the choice to be like making these changes to yourself, reprogramming yourself with like, oh, I'm gonna give myself a bunch of skills, and then, you know, oh well, no, I shouldn't know these things. Not how does that affect me. I find myself thinking of Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide, who knows so much, brain the size of a planet, right? And because he can truly fathom everything, and it mm-hmm. makes him recognize just how meaningless and like how infinitesimally small he and everyone else and everything else really is. And that drives his depression. So you've got, why would you program a robot to be depressed? Well, it's a byproduct of them like understanding everything.
Mm-hmm. They're just like raw dogging reality, and that's enough to make one depressed.
It's one of those things that, like, I'm fascinated by the idea of artificial life, so to speak, being able to do things like that, because like I've used this comparison, like the two of you, myself, listeners, what does a million look like? Tell me what a million is. Okay, you got a million ping pong balls, how many dump trucks does that fill up? I have no idea. I have no idea how big a million is, but you know, a being that could do incredible calculations in its head in nanoseconds could tell you, oh, that fills up exactly this much space. I know exactly how big a million is. And that at least gives you a sense of that. Or I know how long it would take you to count to a million if you counted at this rate. I could calculate that. You know, it would take you hours and hours and hours to come to a million, whatever. And now imagine having that kind of knowledge about so many things. And how would that affect your headspace? Like, what kind of a mindset would that put you in? What would that make you think about everything? That's the, you know, set aside some of the toxic Rick stuff, but that's a big part of Rick and Morty is Rick is the smartest being in the universe. And that's why he's a nihilist.
Well, and what, and at what point would, you know, a computerized brain get overwhelmed? At what point would be too much information? And what would that burnout look like?
That would be a great thing to write into your TTRPG. Like, okay, you have, maybe you're making a TTRPG about everyone is androids. You're all capable of doing these amazing things, but you hit a burnout point. You hit an overload. You're literally too hot right now. Your brain's going to melt. Those would be really interesting, fascinating, like ways to change instead of you have your HP. No, you don't. You have your, I don't know, computer
your
stuff.
CPU. Usage. Yeah.
I was trying to think, okay, when I hit control panel, what do I see?
I'm just imagining an android who's just like so tired, just like I don't have the RAM for this. you guys figure it out.
Or someone who knows more about computers should do this than me.
An android who, you know, programs themselves or downloads so much information that they now have enough information to solve a big problem that has eluded humanity, right? Solve some sort of big problem, pick your poison. And not only do they have the ability to do that, they know it's going to take some amount of time, and they know only they can do it, and they have the impetus, the want to do it. So now they are constantly distracted. Because while they are running around on adventures with you, they are also in the back of their brain figuring out how to cure cancer.
Go.
You look so excited.
All I was gonna say
was that, like, I think it would be really fun to play an android character who essentially deals with other party members as though they were playing The Sims and is like constantly trying to get these people to make the optimal choices for, you know, what they're doing. Like, why aren't you in bed? Go to bed. Like, why? Like, almost like a mom character. I think that would be really fun. And
that's a big reversal of like what you do when you're playing The Sims.
there's a balance point to be had in the game mechanics and the, you know, power balance of characters. But then, like, if enough information has been presented to you in a game where you're fighting the monster, right, or fighting the bad guy, whatever it is, the big bad robot, and like once enough information has been presented, like, can the android character, should they know like what the armor of the thing is immediately, and should they know like what percentage chance roughly everybody has of, like, you know, like what's going to affect, like how much knowledge should they get, like meta game knowledge all of a sudden, because the, like, they've got information, they've been fed data that you as a GM have presented in story form through narrative and game mechanics, and like at what point can they utilize that meta knowledge, or would they?
That, those are some,
do
of the,
do they feel
things
that's
that...
fair? Do they, would they feel bad if they overshadowed their human counterparts?
Like... Right. So as in your game mechanics, you could, for example, if they, when they log into that database or whatever they're doing to access this data, they are leaving themselves vulnerable to maybe the neuroses, like you get the C-3PO anxiety, you get, you get the Marvin depression, whatever it is. Or other things that can happen to, like, the symbolic stuff of, you accidentally downloaded a virus. You had a bug in your programming. Like, those are things that you could design into your game that would make it, you know, really interesting and fascinating.
And that could make, like, an android hacker really interesting, too, because that could be a condition of failure, is that now your systems are vulnerable to the program that you're trying to hack.
Turns into a risk reward kind of thing. I can download all this data to learn and gain all this useful knowledge and even be able to perform better in certain circumstances. But in the process, I am opening myself up to attack, and it could be failure based. And it could also just be like length of time spent. And the GM is just quietly behind their screen, rolling dice and looking at the android player and be like, all right, I know whether or not something has invaded your system. You don't know yet.
that would be really fun for me as a GM, because one of my favorite things to do is when players roll stealth checks, they'll let me know what they got. I'll be like, okay, you think you're hidden.
I say stuff like that all the time.
They're like, well, am I? And I'm like,
You feel you did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Especially when it's like one of those middling numbers.
Like, yeah.
They get an 18 or 19 on the die. Yeah, no. Like if I'm playing capers or something and somebody gets like a 10, I'm like, you think you did pretty well. 10's yeah. a very, 10, you know, flipping a 10 is good enough for some cases, but sometimes you need a face card.
You certainly feel good about it. Like, yeah. Well, what does that mean?
It means you haven't botched. Because if you botched, you would know that, like, hey, I just stepped on a twig or, you know, fell down and
you
shouted.
You wouldn't feel so good.
You wouldn't feel good about it, but you feel pretty good about this.
Yeah. So my idea that I got really excited about that now I want to do is regarding magic. You know that there's the saying that magic is just technology we don't understand yet, or whatever the quote is, direct quote. You could literally include that in your game where, yeah, you have these android characters who are, they can solve whatever problem, but in order to do that, they have to tap into like this central database, the hive mind of androids everywhere, yeah, to access this gigantic like data system.
Records of androids.
Yes. And every time you tap into that, you are also, of course, you're connecting all of your information there and vice versa. So you could have a world. You could have a world of robots. I'm going to play this game right now. You have, yes, they have these androids that purposefully disconnected themselves from this system. And now they've developed their own individuality. And they know if I tap back into this, I lose part of my individuality. I start going back to my default programming or like this gigantic programming. And you could have some really good ethical dilemmas. Like, yeah, you can. Like, you can figure out how to make this magic happen. But
At what cost?
At the cost of your personal self-preservation, your identity. What does that mean? Those are also, like, you could even get a little religious with that, because there are religions where, like, when you die, you go back into the whole of the spirit, yeah, and you lose your individuality, and that can be very scary to people. Some people embrace that. There are all sorts of ways you could explore things like that. And then as a designer would have to think, like, okay, how can I mechanize that? Like, what does that look like in terms of the rule set or the guidance for the GM or for the players? I think the idea, the individuality idea for androids is, oh man, that's fascinating to me. I always come out of these conversations with like ideas of things that I want to write or do or GM.
I think you could even do something kind of cool with the idea of an android oracle. Who, like, perhaps just as an example, when they sleep, they dream, quote unquote, in the way that they connect to a collective consciousness or unconsciousness. And they are receiving data during that time that can help them, you know, like it might be considered an omen to the others who don't experience this phenomenon. And I think that could be really cool too, as a way to, if a character really wants to play like a psychic or a psionic, however you want to phrase it, that would be potentially one way to do it, is to give them prophetic quote unquote dreams of that nature.
Writing this down for my next Means of Magic game.
Yes.
I only made the Means of Magic so I could play Robot Fae. That's the only reason I made that game. I won that.
What a great idea. It's incredible. Like, I'm super, super fascinated by that whole concept.
Thank you. It's very fun. That's my own personal obsession.
I love it.
A game designer who loves their game. Huh, who would have thunk?
Weird.
A game designer who made a game because they wanted to play it.
Mm-hmm. I really like the idea of the sleeping oracle, and like you are interpreting this data. Maybe it's not even, maybe they are characters that can, they understand it from their robot side, from their computer side, but it's very hard for someone who knows all that to then communicate it with people who don't understand.
Yeah. Yes.
How do you translate this code into human language? Maybe exactly. It comes out muddled up.
maybe that's what C-3PO is doing when he's just giving you the odds of everything. He's just, he's quoting statistics at you because that's the only way he knows how to tell you about these prophetic things that he knows is yeah, by, exactly. is by putting it in a simple term, a simple, you know, a simple, space that people would be able to understand. If I tell them that the odds are this bad, surely they won't, you know, fly into the asteroid field.
Yeah.
I think too, just something to consider as designers, what different things do your Android characters need in order to survive in whatever world you're doing? So, I mean, there are Android characters in fantasy games, like for you mentioned Coyote, you mentioned Warforged. That's a big example. And of course, Androids appear in sci-fi, like more common, I feel like, than even humans sometimes. What do they need in order to survive? Do they need air? Or if they don't need air, if they don't need food, what do they need to upkeep their machinery? What do they need? How do they get that? What items, what resting determination do you need for these characters compared to the humans? What does that look like in your game? And it's just like different things to think about beyond the they're different, they're logical, they're blah blah blah. You should consider the actual reality of your game, and again also the symbolism. What does this mean really under the surface?
How long does that battery stay charged? Like a human can go technically a pretty long time without eating food, water not so much, but food quite a long time. You just start cannibalizing your body. Android, battery runs out.
Yeah. Does that mean death for the character, or does it mean a stasis for the character?
Yeah.
Can they be revived with this
shot?
Is
it something in between? If they put, you know, if the battery runs down and they put a new somebody puts a new battery in later, are they mostly back, but they lost a little something? That's almost worse about that than straight. That's you know, that's worse than straight death, I think. Like, you know, like okay, well, I can, if I have to lose, if I have to, you know, go, you know, drain my battery down completely, I can, because it allows me to not be scanned, not be picked up on a scanner or whatever. I can put myself in a cargo container and sneak on board the ship, right? Because they can't scan, they don't pick up a power source. But then I'm waiting for somebody on the ship to come and charge me back up, but I'm going to lose something. And what am I going to lose? And am I willing to risk that for whatever goal this, you know, this story has in store for me?
And that's a really fun consequence, especially if your androids cannot experience death the way an organic life form can. I think that is a really cool, because like sometimes I know GMs, including myself, have trouble coming up with appropriate and meaningful consequences for, you know, like an android character who might go offline or you know, run out of milk, like the alien androids seem to bleed for some reason. But I think it's always really cool to explore the idea of there are things worse than death. And especially for characters who don't experience it in the same way that others would.
Yeah, maybe for an android, death is really final. Whereas for maybe the organic characters in the party get to go to some sort of afterlife. What does that mean? Oh, that's horrifying.
You get to explore too, like if an android doesn't experience that death, what is it to live forever and to watch everyone around you, you know, leave or die? And not only that, but if your android does experience a death, is that like it could be something as dramatic as, you know, Craig said, you lose a little something every time that, you know, a death-like condition occurs. What happens when you lose everything? Do you just become a robot, no longer an android, no longer having any sapience or anything like that? And is that death for you, to just be what you were programmed to be?
And do you realize that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that you were once so much more and you can never be that again?
Mm-hmm.
Like
it's like Donna Noble. losing her memory and
buried alive. You know, basically the Android version buried alive. I was once so much more, and now I am trapped in here with my thoughts, and there's nothing I can do. All I can do is follow my programming and take orders.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, horror! How do we always get into horror topics, Craig?
Because we both love horror. First love.
Coyote, do you have any final thoughts for us in this conversation on androids?
Oh, I have just loved every second of it. This is one of my special interests, and I am so happy that I got to ramble about it. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your experiences and your thoughts on this topic. This is a great topic, and I hope that people who are listening get some good, fresh ideas out of it.
I'm putting it in my notes for the game idea that I have. I'm going to be like, make sure to re-listen to this episode.
Coyote, where can we find you and your stuff?
You can find me on pretty much every social media platform under either Coyote Crow or writer_coyote. I do also have a Patreon that I write weekly microfiction on that patrons can help me decide, you know, which direction it goes next and things like that. There's polls every so often. So yeah, if you like super weird microfiction, lots of horror, lots of sci-fi and stuff like that, you can find me there too.
Excellent. You can find me at wannabegames.com or on itch or DriveThruRPG under the same name. I think that's all I have right now.
You can find me at NerdBurgerCraig on the various social medias. My website is nerdburgergames.com. The games are all at drivethroughrpg.com. Although the fancy schmancy books are that we had done at print runs are at the store on the website. And if all goes according to plan, by the time you're listening to this episode, Hypersleep Terminated will be on Kickstarter. It is a variation on the rule set from Die Laughing. So if you like that game, instead of everybody getting killed in a horror comedy movie, you are all playing characters in a space disaster movie, and some of you are going to not make it to the end, and the rest of you actually have to try to save the day. This is the variation of the game where there are win conditions. You don't all die to the monster. You can have some of you actually avert disaster.
What is there an android archetype?
There is not. There are the archetypes. There's nothing that says you can't play the character as an android. Or as an alien, for that matter. The archetypes are specifically just like the troublemaker, the know-it-all, they're kind of personality types, including an archetype called the asshole, because every disaster movie has to have that one jag that messes around with stuff. And there's, to balance that, there's the lovable rogue. There's a bunch.
Awesome.
Thank you to our opening and closing theme song, which is Avel by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs. And thank all of you for listening. We'll see you back here next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.